Good morning and welcome to A Voice of a People live here on WGH Talk. And how is your day going so far? My name is Linda Sims, and like I say, the name of the show is called A Voice of a People, and we welcome you this morning. Boy, the sun is shining and the heat is getting hotter, right? But it's sure enough a lot better than being in all that frigid cold. And all right, and some people's air conditioners are up way too high. And then when you go from a hot, you know, from out being outside in the hot and you go into the cold, it's like shock to your body. So maybe we don't need to have our air conditioners that high, but I wish everyone a safe and blessed day out there today. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. Or you can download a free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. Or you can call in during a live broadcast like today by calling 740-383-9944 for questions or just like to make a comment or just want to be a part of the show today. Okay, let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC of 1325 North Main Street in Marion, Ohio. Phone number there is 740-382-8552. We have Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Phone there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Excuse me. They have an ongoing announcement, free produce every third Saturday of every month. The next one takes place June 17th of 2023. So mark your calendars and share this information with friends and neighbors, or even family members that may have need of free produce. We also have Shirley. She is the coordinator of Child's Evangelism Fellowship, known as the Good News Clubs, in all of Marion City Elementary Schools, County Schools, and North Union County Schools. This is a faith-based program. It will take place in October of 2023. If you are interested in your children or grandchildren being a part of this program, please contact Cheryl Lee at 740-262-0939 or just wait until school starts and you will be able to pick up an application in the office. They do need your permission for your child to be a part of this program, and it is a great program. I'd like to start my show off with a thought for today. This thought is titled Resent Not. There are no justified resentments. To resent someone is to fall under the illusion that they are the cause of our suffering. No one can die from a snake bite. It's the poison that kills them. You may receive the poison of another's words or even just in a glance, but you don't have to absorb it or allow it free passage through the veins of your consciousness. The consequence of not absorbing the poison of others is you never experience enmity towards others, and people notice when you have absolutely no enmity. It draws them close. It empowers them. It builds trust. It enables harmony to break out. It is only because the lion has no thought of killing the lamb that the lamb feels able to come so close. So let us resent not. Hopefully that thought for today can find you. And if not, maybe you can help someone else find resent not. I'd like to turn my attention to my guest today, Fred Malone. He is the chairman of the Marion County Historical Society. How are you doing today, Fred?
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
And thank you for coming today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I enjoy this.
So what do you have to share with us today?
Well, we're going to talk some more about trivia and fun facts about our chief executives over the years. We've not finished that whole segment. I've got a lot more to talk about there. But I wanted to start out, first of all, with just a kind of a few housekeeping items here.
Okay.
I wanted to, first of all, mention that the Marion County Historical Society lost a really great friend and supporter back on May 13 with the passing of Mike Perry.
Oh,
I don't know whether you knew Mike or not.
Sorry but, to hear that.
Mike was keeper of all things Marion, I should say. He was first and foremost, he collected music boxes and all things that have to deal with that type of thing, Nickelodeons, player pianos, all that type of thing. He was a big collector of those items. But he also was an individual that collected a lot of Marion memorabilia over the years, especially photographs. We need to thank Mike because a number of years ago he went to an auction, I think it was over in Mount Gilead, and had the forethought to buy several boxes, and I forget how many hundreds there were, but several boxes of plate glass negatives, which is what they used to use before we got modern day photography.
Right.
The glass negative is what they would print the picture from. And he had the foresight to buy all of those, and they were all Marion County photographs.
Right.
Going way back into the 1800s. And of course, he had converted those over to pictures, and a lot of them can be seen even today on Growing Up in Marion, on the Facebook page, Growing Up in Marion. Of course, we have the photographs at the museum now as part of our collection. But Mike was 79, died suddenly of a heart attack on May 13th on Saturday evening. And the unusual thing about it was I had done a program for the Wyandotte County Historical Society on the Thursday before that Saturday. Mm. And Mike and Linda, his wife, were there. Mm-hmm. And Mike came up and talked to me after the program was over. And this just goes to show you never know when today might be the last day you talk with someone.
That's true.
And as it turned out, that was the last time I had a chance to talk with Mike. And he passed away that Saturday evening at home. I just wanted to thanks to Mike and to anyone that knew Mike and knew his love for Marion and his love for all things Marion and Marion history. It was a great service to the Historical Society, definitely a great service to the Historical Society, and he will be missed tremendously.
Right.
He served on our board several times over the years. Wasn't currently a board member, but had just gone off the board last year, and has served in that capacity several times over the years. So we will miss him, and I think about him every day. I'm sure I'll continue to do that for the rest of my life, because he touched us all. He was actually born, I want to say he was born in Van Wert, somewhere up in that part of the state, and came here when he was 2 years old. So basically, he was a Marion guy.
Yes,
you know?
He was.
Spent 77 years here. So anyway, Mike, rest in peace. We miss you. Did hear on the radio this morning, or on the television this morning, that Rosalynn Carter, President Carter's wife, they just determined that she is now suffering from dementia.
Okay.
They didn't say what kind of a situation it was, whether it was extremely serious or just the beginning, but I think she's 95.
Oh, my.
And I think he's 97. And, of course, he's at home now receiving hospice care. But the family does say that with the way he's been over the last couple of months, it looks like he'll make it to another birthday in October, you know, God willing. He's a remarkable man. Yeah, he's a remarkable man. And the two of them, since they left the White House back in the early 80s, they have spent their life helping other people, especially with Habitats, through Habitats Humanity.
Yes.
Built a lot of homes. He's traveled all over the world doing that work. He's also been around the world acting as an election observer in countries that don't have, you know, the type of elections that we have, to make sure that they're done right. And just everything. His life has been a blessing to all of us, not
yes.
just people that knew him personally. An excellent author. I've forgotten how many books he's written, numerous books, at least a couple of dozen. I've read most of them. He's an excellent author and a good Christian man.
Okay.
Up until just about 6 months ago, still teaching Sunday school.
Really?
Yeah, in Plains, Georgia, at the church that they've gone to their whole lives.
That's something.
Yeah, and I think they'll soon be celebrating their 77th wedding anniversary, which is almost unheard of.
Yeah.
Almost unheard of. Yeah, and especially, you know, in this day and age.
Still, kind of puts them in their 20s when they got married.
Exactly. Yeah, they were sweethearts in school. They met in grade school, mm-hmm. actually, and have been together basically ever since. And they've done everything that they've done in their life. They've done together, which I think is probably the reason why it lasted 77 years. You know, that individual becomes a part of you when you're with someone that long. So. God bless them both. I admire both of them, and I was sorry to hear this morning about her dementia. But, you know, things affect us as we age. And
yes, they do.
We never know, you know, what's going to touch our lives as we go along. Did want to mention, too, that the Mohawk Historical Society is now open for the season. We are on our regular hours now, which run Wednesday through Sunday from 1 to 4. So you can stop anytime between 1 and 4 on those days, Wednesday through Sunday, and you can take a tour of the museum. And, of course, I'd like to say that now we aren't just not the Mohawk or not the Marion County Historical Society Museum alone. For years, of course, we've had the Wyandotte Popcorn Museum as part of our building, which is a separate museum within our museum. And, of course, now we have Mary Ellen Withrow's collection. Her museum is now part of our museum. We have the old GTE Telephone Museum, which used to be located out on Bell Fountain Avenue and is now part of our museum. And we have the Woodland Elves, which was Sherry Williamson's museum that they kept at their home for a number of years. She, of course, taught school and created these characters for young kids, the Woodland Elves, and when they were very, very, very popular when she had the whole shebang at her house. Of course, they had to sell their house a couple of years ago. Her husband had some health issues, and they're not in the area anymore. But
oh, really? They had
Yeah. They're I think they're in Florida now. I believe that's
really?
Where they went to. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was back when we had a grand opening. Well, it'll be about a year ago. Next month,
right?
We had a grand opening at the museum for the Woodland Elves Museum, as well as Mary Ellen's and the Telephone Museum. And she and her husband were there for that. She gave a couple of talks that day and told about how she got started with the Woodland Elves, mm-hmm. and writing the books. And of course, she taught. I think she taught for at least 30 years.
Yeah, she was one of my daughters.
Was she?
First
yeah,
grade teacher.
Great lady.
Yes.
A really great lady. And,
yes,
a fabulous imagination to create
those
characters. And I never had the opportunity to see it while it was at her home.
Oh, I was out there.
But they said it was fantastic.
It was.
And the way that the girls at the museum have set it up at our museum is fantastic, too. We have a separate room for it, and, you know, they have the kids get the flashlight, and they get the hunt for that and all that. So it's a lot of fun. It's been a great addition to our museum as well. So
yes,
so anyway, when you come to the Marion County Historical Society Museum, which is Heritage Hall, the old post office building on Church Street, you'll get to see all five of those museums all for one price. And and I don't remember what it costs now, but it's minimal. And of course, there's a break for seniors, and there's a break for kids under a certain age too. So
right.
makes a great day trip. A couple of upcoming events. August the 5th is our First Ladies Luncheon. This is, I think, I want to say 7 or 8 years that we've done the First Ladies Luncheon, and we are selling tickets for that now. There'll be 4 First Ladies that will speak that day, and we'll have a buffet-style lunch, and the buffet, the food on the buffet will be taken from the original White House recipes that were being eaten by the featured speakers that day. So the four First Ladies that are going to be speaking that day will be what they were eating in the White House. And that's at Tri Rivers. And I believe, I didn't bring any paperwork with me, but I believe those tickets are $25 a piece, and it's open seating. And those are being sold now. You can contact the museum. Either stop up during the open hours on Wednesday through Sunday and get a ticket, or you can stop Monday through Friday in the office, and the girls can take care of it for you there too. Then October the 14th, and I don't have any information with me on this, but I just happened to think about it, and I'll mention it. For years, we did a ham and bean supper at Kingston.
Oh, that sounds good.
That was sponsored by the Historical Society, and it was a fundraiser for the Historical Society. And the folks at Kingston, Dave Steers did all the cooking. He's the chef there, and been there, I think, for like 27 or 28 years. He's a fabulous cook,
okay.
I'll tell you. My wife and I have eaten there a lot since her dad's there. But he's going to do all the cooking. We'll have beans and cornbread, and it'll be, I think, it's $7, and either carry out or you can eat in.
Right.
But that's going to be October the 14th, and I believe the hours are 4:30 to 7, and I'll talk about that more when we get closer to October, but just wanted to throw that out.
Okay.
We're not selling tickets yet, but put it on your calendar, October the 14th. So we did it for a number of years, then we stopped doing it, and I don't even remember why, but we haven't done it for a number of years, and Bob Goyer and I were, well, we were over for a dinner, I think it was at Christmas time for my father-in-law. They had a dinner for the family, and Bob and I got to talking about, hey, why don't we try doing that ham and bean dinner again? So we put our heads together, got with Dave, got with the girls up at the museum, and so we're going to do it again.
All right.
And I'm kind of really calling it the Mary Jo Baxter Memorial Ham and Bean Dinner, because Mary Jo was one of our wonderful volunteers for years and years, and she passed away a couple of years ago. She kind of always took charge of the ham and bean dinner, made sure that everything ran smoothly. So I'm calling it her memorial ham and bean dinner. She was a great lady. We both grew up in the same area of Southern Ohio, about 20 miles apart. Every time we'd get together, we had to talk about, you know, things that went on down home in Hocking County and that type of thing. So that was always a lot of fun sharing time and spending time with her. So
right.
Again, that's October the 14th. Put that on your calendar. And when we get a little closer, I'll have more information about how you can get tickets. I think it's going to probably be advanced ticket sales, because we'll need to know how many ham and beans to cook.
Right.
And cornbread. So
sounds good.
But I'll let you know more. We'll have more information as that comes along. November the 4th, which is on a Saturday, it's always the first Saturday of November, is our dinner with the presidents. And I think this is the 15th, 16th year we've done that. And this year we're going to be down at All Occasions in Waldo. We're changing our location. We lost our caterer, who we had since the beginning. So we're going to try All Occasions. And we did it there the very, very first year we had it. And then we moved it into town. Mm-hmm. But now we'll be going down to All Occasions. This is a good location. It's
right.
Easy to find. It's right there off of 23. And that will be taking place on November the 4th. And that starts at 5:30. Tickets are available now. You can get those either by stopping at the museum or giving the museum a call, or going online at marianhistory.com, and you can get more information about that. You can actually buy your tickets online now with PayPal, I think it is.
Okay.
So those are available. So those are some of the upcoming things that are going to be happening there. And then the Mohawk Historical Society's museum up in Sycamore is officially open now. And we are only open on Saturdays from the hours of 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. But we have three buildings that you can tour. And that museum basically takes in all of the areas that were covered by the Mohawk School District, which actually takes in part of three counties, Wyandotte, Seneca, and Crawford County. So it's a pretty big area,
yes.
Mileage-wise, not an extremely big district as far as kids are concerned, but it covers a lot of ground. So there's a lot of really cool stuff to see in that museum as well. It goes all the way back to the founding of the village, which took place in the early 1800s. So pretty cool place. So those are kind of the things I wanted to get out of the way. I did want to also invite anybody that's interested. The Mohawk Historical Society also owns the old Opera House in Melmore, which is on State Route 100, and in Melmore. And we bought that probably 5 years ago. We completely redid it, restored it to what it was in its heyday. It was built in 1910. And we have free events there all the time during the summer. And we have one coming up that actually is not going to be at the Opera House, but it's going to be at the Plank Road Tavern, which is in McCutcheonville on State Route 53, about halfway between Upper Sandusky and Tiffin. And we chose that place because people can have something to eat before the program. But the program, and it's a free program, you have to pay for your own dinner, but the program is free, and that's going to be on Thursday, June the 15th at 6 o'clock. And the title of the program is An Evening with Tom Walton. Now, if you know much about Wyandotte County, the name Walton is a large name in Wyandotte County. There's tons of Waltons up there. There's Walton Grain, which is everybody knows if you're in the area. And then a lot of farmers up there by the name of Walton. But it's just a big family. The evening is An Evening with Tom Walton. And Tom was a Sycamore native. And he is a retired editor and vice president of the Toledo Blade, which is one of the largest newspapers in Northwest Ohio. He knew at an early age that his future was in newspaper journalism. In the seventh grade, in fact, when his science teacher took one look at his test answers and offered his heartfelt advice that, "I'm not sure that chemistry is going to be right for you." So Tom knew right away that he ought to think about something else, and his science teacher said, "Maybe you ought to consider journalism." So that was a good call. Over the years, as editor of not only the Toledo Blade, but he did was the editor of a newspaper in Monterey, California, before he came to Toledo. He was the editor of the Blade for 42 years. 42 years. Pretty good for a small-town boy that grew up in a town of only 850 people. He hosted WGTE, which is one of their TV stations up there, a program called The Editors in the 90s. Did that for several years. After he retired, he began writing a humor and commentary column in the Toledo Blade, which is now on a podcast through WGTE. Tom has just finished a new book called Life as We Know It, Some Assembly Required. took 15 years. Took 15 years to write, but the fans of his regular humor commentary in the Toledo Blade insist that it's worth the wait. His witty examinations of everything life happens to throw at us, from potholes to politicians to COVID, have been appearing in the Blade since 2007. So, if you are interested in coming that evening, food will be available, as I said, and you can make a reservation at the Plank Road Tavern by calling them at 419-981-2285. And that's 419-981-2285. And there will be some super specials to choose from. And seating, of course, will be on a first-come, first-served basis. Again, if you want more information on that, you can go to the Mohawk Historical Society's website. Just type in Mohawk Historical Society, Sycamore, Ohio, and it'll come up, and get more information on that. But I think it's going to be a really fun night to be there. I know Tom personally. I've known him for 40 years, and he's a very humorous individual, very, very smart individual. Had to be pretty smart to stay editor of a newspaper for that long.
Yes.
But a great guy, and I think that's going to be a well worth your time and effort. Getting back to the Opera House, if you watch that website, or if you become a member of the Mohawk Historical Society for only $10 a year, you get 6 wonderful newsletters. And those newsletters come every other month, and they will keep you up to date on what is happening in the Opera House. Over the years, we've had all kinds of different musical groups. We've had singing groups. We've had some Chautauqua groups in there. We've even had the New Christy Minstrel in there before. And if you're a child of the 50s and 60s growing up with folk music, you know who the New Christy Minstrels were.
Yes.
They've actually been there a couple of times. So it's a great place. The acoustics, in fact, the guy that started the Christy Minstrels, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now, but he's in his early 80s now. The first time he performed there, he said, "You know, I've performed all over the world." He said, "I've performed in New York and Rockefeller Center and huge auditoriums." And he said, "This little opera house has the best acoustics of any place I've ever performed."
Wow.
which is saying something, because it only seats like 150 people, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
That is small.
Yeah, yeah, but fantastic, absolutely.
Maybe that's why it's so good.
Could very well be, but we have, there's a lower seating, and then there's a small balcony, and every time we have an event there, we fill it up, and we usually have standing room only, you know, but we completely redid it. We put a new heating and cooling system in it. We did not change the seating. The original chairs are there that were in there in 1910 when it was built as an opera house. Mm-hmm. So we kept the aesthetics right. The stage is the same. We actually found and have the original backdrop curtain that has all the local advertisements on it.
Right.
That's up in our attic at the opera house. And a number of years ago, we had that same mural repainted on the back wall of the stage, so you can see those original advertisements
right
on the stage now that we're on that backdrop there. So it's pretty cool. It's a neat place.
Sounds
to
like
neat
it.
Place to go. Yeah, neat place to go. The Mohawk Historical Society's newsletter, as I said, is $10 a year to be a member. Once you reach the age of 80, you no longer pay membership. Your membership is free after you've become 80 years of age.
Age has an advantage.
It does. And you continue to get the newsletter. Charlie Evers was one of our founding members and came up several times over the years. When we would do a remodel, we'd always have Charlie come up and do a, you know, open house, you know, type of thing.
Kristen and Mike.
Yep. And, of course, Jeannie still gets the newsletter, okay. His wife. Yep, she still gets the newsletter. But we have membership, and this is hard to believe, we have membership in over 40 states in the United States. People that belong to the Mohawk Historical Society, just to get the newsletter and to keep up what's going on in the old hometown, you know? Yeah, so
that's great.
It's pretty cool. Wanted to read an article here before we move on to the presidential stuff. We all, I think most of us anyway, at least people my age, and I have to stop and think sometimes, maybe the young kids aren't attuned to this, and then this brings to mind... Kingston just had their annual Boomer Expo.
Okay.
Are you familiar? Have you ever been to it before?
I don't think so.
It's the Baby Boomer Expo.
Okay.
And it's usually outside. The weather was great. Last Friday, it was on Friday. But you go and you get entertainment. They have entertainment going on. You get a free lunch. See, there's still such thing as a free lunch.
Right.
You get a free lunch. They'll have all kinds of booths set up, excuse me, where as seniors, you know how we love to get free stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So they have a big, the big parking lot up there is all set up with people from the different health insurance companies, Medicare representatives, let's see, the seniors groups, veterans groups, the sheriff's department had a booth out there. There was information on senior fraud, all kinds of drawings, all kinds of free stuff being handed out, and it's totally free.
Wow.
And so that day I portrayed Groucho Marx. In fact, I think if you go to web
I
to the
I see you doing that.
I do that quite a bit. I've done him for years. But if you go to Facebook or the website for the Kingston residents, there's probably some pictures of the event that day. It's funny because, you know, grandparents will bring the younger kids along with them, usually the ones that are under 10.
Yes.
And as Groucho, they look at me like, who is that guy? You know, and I'll say, do you know who I am? Of course, I have no idea whatsoever.
Of course not.
And, of course, Grandpa and Grandma have to tell them who that is.
Mm-hmm.
I did run into a young man. He was 23 or 24, and I forget what booth he was setting up, or he had set up there, but I walked up to him, and he said, who are you supposed to be? And I said, I had a feeling you wouldn't know. So I told him, and of course, he had his phone. He said, I said, just Google me.
Right.
So he did, and he said, I think I've seen a movie that you were in once. I said, there's a bunch of them, you know, look them up.
Yeah, they are. Yes,
so,
they are.
Groucho Marx. Along the same lines as Groucho Marx, in this month's newsletter from the Mohawk Historical Society, Kim had an article about the Three Stooges. And who did not like the Three Stooges?
I know,
I mean, they
crazy.
were, it was slapstick comedy, but so funny. So I wanted to read a little bit of this article about the Three Stooges, because most of our listening audience, I think, are in the twilight time of their life, so they're going to appreciate this. The Three Stooges were an American vaudeville and comedy team active from 1922 until 1970.
Whoa, long time.
Yeah. Best remembered for their 190 short subject films through Columbia Pictures. 190. Their hallmark styles were physical farce and slapstick. Six Stooges appeared over the act's run. I didn't realize there were this many of them.
I didn't either.
With the three active at any given time. So there were always just three of them going, but there were some that rotated in and out. Mo Howard, born Moses Horowitz, and Larry Fine, born Louis Feinberg, were mainstays throughout the ensemble's nearly 50-year run. So Mo and Larry were always there. Mo was the one that had the long bowl cut.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Mo was had the short hair, or no hair at all. The pivotal third stooge was played by, in order of appearance, Shemp Howard, born Samuel Horowitz, Curly Howard, born Jerome Horowitz, then Shemp Howard again, then Joe Besser, and Curly Joe Derita. So over the years, there were several that rolled in and out in that third spot. Again, Mo and Larry were always the same. The act began in the early 1920s as part of a vaudeville comedy act billed as Ted Healy and His Stooges, which I'd never heard of before, consisting originally of Ted Healy and Mo Howard. Over time, they were joined by Mo's brother Shemp Howard and then Larry Fine. The four appeared in one feature film, Soup to Nuts, before Shemp left to pursue a solo career. He was replaced by his and Mo's younger brother, Jerome, who was known as Curly Howard, in 1932. 2 years later, after appearing in several movies, the trio left Healy and signed on to appear in their own short subject comedies for Columbia Pictures, now billed as the Three Stooges. So in 1932, they took on the name Three Stooges. From 1934 to 1946, Mo, Larry, and Curly produced over 90 short films for Columbia, bringing them their peak popularity. Curly suffered a debilitating stroke in May of 1946. That's when Shemp returned, reconstituting the original lineup, until his death of a heart attack on November 22nd of 1955, 3 years and 10 months after Curly's death of a cerebral hemorrhage in 1952. Film actor Joe Palma stood in, shot from behind to obscure his face, to complete four Shemp-era shorts under contract. So they were making these movies when Shemp died. They had to get a stand-in to fill in for him. This procedure, disguising one actor as another outside of stunt shots, became known as fake Shemp.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Columbia contract player Joe Besser joined as the third stooge for 2 years, 1956 and 57, departing in 1958 to nurse his ill wife after Columbia terminated its shorts division. The studio then released all the shorts via Screen Gems, and I've seen that on TV appear,
right.
Columbia's television studio and distribution unit. Screen Gems then syndicated the short to television, whereupon the Stooges became one of the most popular comedy acts of the early 1960s, about the time I was, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old. Comic actor Joe Derita became Curly Joe in 1958, replacing Joe Besser for a new series of full-length theatrical films. With intense television exposure in the United States, the act regained momentum throughout the 1960s as popular kids' fare, until Larry's paralyzing stroke in the midst of filming a pilot for a Three Stooges TV series in January of 1970. He died in that month, in January of 1975, after a further series of strokes. Unsuccessful attempts were made in 1970 and 75 to revive the act with longtime supporting actor Emil Sitka in Fine's role, but they were cut short when Mo Howard died on May the 4th of 1975, which ended the Three Stooges altogether.
Right, right.
But I still see them broadcast
on
TV occasionally. You'll see a Three Stooges movie.
Yes.
So, I thought that was an interesting article, and I wanted to share that with our listeners, because I know people.
You wonder what happened to them.
You
like
do,
that,
you yeah, know, you really
years,
do.
You know.
Yeah, and the other one that I often think about was Laurel and Hardy.
Yes.
You know, I liked Laurel and Hardy real well, and I saw a documentary on them.
Yeah, they were funny.
Oh, my word. I mean, just pure slapstick stuff.
Yes.
But I saw a documentary not too awfully long ago, and they, of course, they were popular in silent films before talkies, and then they made a hit in talkies. But sadly, they both, I think, were pretty much penniless when they died.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I saw a documentary on that that chronicled their life. And, you know, when they quit making movies and that era of slapstick comedy kind of died out, they had nothing else to do, and they couldn't find work.
Right,
you know?
And contracts may not have been, you know, written up like they are today.
Right, and you know, I understand that residuals on like TV programs and movies and things like that didn't really come into play until much later. I'm talking like 60s and 70s.
Right.
I know we had a few years ago over at Malabar Farm, do you remember The Rifleman?
Yes.
That used to be on TV? Johnny Crawford, who was the son of The Rifleman.
Yes.
We had him over at Malabar a few years ago.
Okay.
We did a Hollywood Returns to Malabar, and we had him. And you remember Grizzly Adams?
Yes, I do.
We had the guy that played Grizzly Adams. And on the Daniel Boone show, there was a little kid that played Daniel Boone's son.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what his name was.
I vaguely remember him, yes.
A little blonde-haired kid. Well, we had him. We had all three of those guys came, and they spent a weekend with us over at Malabar.
That was great.
And I remember Johnny Crawford telling me that he never received residuals from the Rifleman show, because they didn't start paying residuals to actors until after, sometime after that show had went off, and that's when they started picking up and started paying residuals.
Right.
But up until that time, they didn't get paid for any of those, and they went into syndication, and they played all the time, you know,
right.
played all
right.
the time. And then one of the guys was telling me, I don't remember who it was then, said, yes, he got residuals from Daniel Boone show or whatever one it was, either that or Grizzly Adams, and said, yeah, he said, but it was kind of funny. He said, everybody thought we got rich on residuals. He said, I used to get, you know, checks periodically for 14 cents or 18 cents for an episode that I was on. He said,
that's
so
something.
Yeah, we had to find other acting job, because we certainly couldn't live off, even though they showed those all the time. And you can still see Daniel Boone shows on
Rifleman
all the time.
Rifleman,
yeah, Daniel Boone, all of them, especially now that they have these other networks now, Hulu and some of that other stuff, you
right,
know.
Right,
you can pick them up on those shows. Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess if the show was filmed after a certain date,
right,
then they would get residuals. But anything before that, like the Rifleman shows, Johnny Crawford said, I never got a dime for any of those.
That is so sad.
And he went on to, he had a beautiful voice.
Did he?
Singing voice.
Really?
Yeah. I never knew it. He went on to form an orchestra. It was Johnny Crawford and his orchestra, and he traveled all over, well, basically the West Coast, but he did do some stuff in the Midwest and some on the East Coast. But he had an orchestra that played much in the same style as Guy Lombardo. It was a full orchestra. He directed the orchestra, plus he sang. And actually, if you go online, you can see the orchestra. You can see his orchestra performed. I think on YouTube, something
right,
on YouTube.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And I know when he was here, he actually brought some CDs with him when selling some. I didn't, unfortunately, he sold out before I got a chance to get one. But you can probably still find them on the internet. But yeah, yeah. I went on and saw the orchestra perform. They were very good, and he had a beautiful singing voice. We'd never know it,
right?
You know, being a kid on the Rifleman and being in that role. But yeah, it's amazing what some of the things that you learn. But that was a fantastic weekend. We had custom ordered a rifle to be built just like the one that Chuck Connors used on the show. Fully functional.
Okay.
And we raffled it off. And I actually sold the winning raffle ticket for that thing.
How much did it go for?
Well, the raffle tickets were $10 a piece.
Oh.
And I think we ended up, I can't remember what we paid for the rifle now, but we made a couple $1,000s on the raffle. Yeah. And so the guy that got the raffle, he got it for $10, you know, what the cost of his ticket.
Right, right.
And actually sold it to a guy here in Marion that used to be a barber in town.
Okay.
Yeah, he got the winning ticket and got that rifle. So
right.
That was pretty cool. Yeah,
it was
pretty
cool.
So,
yes.
What are we doing for time?
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Probably too late to start on that. Let me grab something else out of this newsletter that I thought was interesting.
I did receive something about.
This is actually an updated thing. The editor of our newsletter put this in because he thought this was very interesting. You know, of course, I spent 22 years in Sycamore working in the bank. I retired from the bank there. And the town has not been over 1,000 people since it was formed back in the early 1800s. The article starts out, says, living in Sycamore High is a wonderful experience. I agree. Great place to raise your kids. The town is situated in the heart of Ohio and offers a small town feel with all the amenities of a larger city. The community has an active and supportive atmosphere that makes it easy to make friends and build relationships. There are plenty of recreational activities such as fishing, camping, and hiking for residents to enjoy. There are also historical sites, museums, parks, and other attractions that offer interesting experiences for visitors and locals alike. The streets are lined with gorgeous trees, which provide shade during the hot summer months and pleasant walking paths throughout the year. There's also a vibrant business district filled with unique shops, restaurants, cafes, and entertainment venues. Overall, living in Sycamore provides an enjoyable lifestyle with plenty of opportunities for exploration and growth. Highlights of the economy. The unemployment rate in Sycamore is 3.3%. The U.S. average is 6. Recent job growth is negative. Sycamore jobs have decreased by just 0.2%. Cost of living compared to the rest of the country, Sycamore's cost of living is 27.7% lower than the U.S. average. Weather and climate, June through September and August are the most pleasant months, while January and December are the least comfortable. Voting in the last presidential election, Wyandotte County remained overwhelmingly Republican, 74% to 24%. Sycamore's current population was 875 people. Since 2020, it has a population decline of 6.3%. Average commute to any place to work is 26 miles. The average national average is 26.4 minutes. The median home cost in Sycamore is only $152,000 compared to over $400,000 the rest of the country. I thought that was very interesting.
It is very interesting. My, my, my.
So sometimes small town living is favorable.
It is.
To larger towns. Living.
It is. Yeah. Cost of living.
Cost of living, absolutely.
It's a big one
right there, right? Yep, absolutely.
And peace and traffic.
Yep.
Traffic.
Traffic, yep, another one. Well, as I say, you know, raising my son was a year old when we moved there. And, of course, grew up there, went to school, graduated from Mohawk High School, and got a great education. So, it was a great place to raise kids. Crime rate, zero.
Right. Know. Right.
You didn't have break-ins. I don't think we ever locked a door in our home the entire 22 years we lived there.
What year was that?
Moved there in 78, retired from the bank in 2000, came to Marion in 2003.
That was a good run of unlocked doors.
Yeah, actually lived there. I retired and still lived there for another 3 years after I retired and came down here.
We are out of time for this hour.
Okay.
Thank you, Fred, for all your information and insight. And
we'll talk about the presidents next hour.
Right, everything that's going on in the historical society. And people who are just old and been in, you know, television and slapstick comedy and all that. Thank you so much for sharing with us. Thank you for being a part of A Voice of a People today with Linda Sims live on WGH Talk. Hopefully you will stay with us for the next hour, 11:15 until 12 noon. Fred Malone will be my guest for the next hour as well. And be careful out there. We know it's nice and the sun is shining, but keep your speed where it's supposed to be, and let's not be in a hurry out there. Memorial Day is behind us, and looking forward to the 4th of July. We're right on the heels of it. So
you're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For people like legendary comedian Shakespeare.